I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This episode of the Cult Pop Show podcast was brought to you by our Patreon.
If you want to tell us which films we should watch, get up to 2 extra exclusive podcasts a month, give us something to talk about in the post-credit scenes at the end of each episode, or even contribute to the discussion in the episode itself, then please consider joining the cult and donating at www.patreon.com/cultpopshow. Richard, let's say there was a guy... And let's say that guy was turning 30 very soon. And let's say that guy wanted to blow off a little steam, maybe try a little substance that he hasn't tried before, okay? Mm-hmm. And let's, for the sake of argument, let's say that substance was, let's say MDMA, right? Mm-hmm. And let's say that that guy understands that to do it safely, you need to get these tests that are supposed to be very easy and very easy to follow to make sure that your substance is pure, mm-hmm. all right? Let's say someone did one of these tests and it was incredibly complicated and this person, this guy, does not feel like he's got a clear answer and is currently, let's say this guy is currently looking at a vial in which to open here to snap a glass nozzle off the top of a vial, then use some of the substance he has and then wait to see what color it turns. Let's say it's turned brown, which is not a bad color, I think, for it to turn.
Generally, brown's considered a pretty bad color for things to turn.
No, there's a chart that this person right. has got. And according to this, this means there is medium to high MDMA content in it. After 45 minutes, I think, is when this person would be able to tell. And then they've got to do another test to make sure that it is not other things. I don't know. Anyway.
Well, how would you know? It's not you.
Yeah. This guy's got problems. But, hey, if anyone out there knows, has experience with these tests, send them over. Tell me what you think, and I'll tell this guy that I made up. It's for a character I'm writing, Richard. It's for a character I'm writing. That's what I'm doing. I mean, what I'm writing that character tonight. What are you up to? How have you been?
See, I think you're confused, AJ. Mm. Livy rizzed up Baby Gronk. And now he's the drip king. Not the other way around.
Oh, right. No, that makes a lot of sense. That was a statement that I understood and that made... a lot of sense. Sorry, I was just distracted by... it doesn't matter what I was distracted by. Welcome, everybody, to Film Franchise Fortnights, a family-friendly show where two very responsible adults...
who are down with, you know, Gen Z celebrities.
Yeah, we certainly don't, you know, put forward bad... we're not bad role models. We don't, you know, sort of... advocate for certain illegal substances for our potentially young and impressionable listeners. We would never do that. No, on this show, what we do is maybe the nerdiest. It's the opposite thing from doing drugs. It's watching movies. And we do this every fortnight. We watch a different film franchise. And Richard, what is the film franchise we watched this fortnight?
This fortnight we watched The Karate Kid. Now, I know what you're thinking, AJ.
Oh, karate.
That's a franchise of 4 films and a remake. Oh, and yeah, you're yep. correct mm-hmm. in thinking that.
Okay, cool. Well, it's good to know that I've understood something this evening. yeah. I mean, you know.
So yeah, The Karate Kid, this is an interesting franchise and one that I'm interested to have the conversation about. You know, what did you think of it beforehand? Mm-hmm. But yeah, the films we're going to be talking about, The Karate Kid, and then parts 2 and 3, The Next Karate Kid, and The Karate Kid 2010. We're not going to be discussing Cobra Kai in this episode. This is strictly film franchise fortnights. And there's a lot of, like, Cobra Kai feels like one of the most, like, important to the franchise, like, TV spin-offs we've ever done. Because there's a lot of things where people are like, oh, are you going to be doing this, like, obscure thing? It's like, well, obviously we're not going to be. But this is one time where I could understand why you would be like, are you going to be covering Cobra Kai as well?
Yeah, and when you say we're not discussing it, we haven't watched it. It might come up. I mean, we're discussing it right now.
Yeah.
You know?
Have you seen The Karate Kid before?
No, I hadn't seen any of this stuff. All I knew going into it was stuff the director had done and sort of vague phrases which never made sense to me growing up, like wax on, wax off, and shit like that.
Yeah. Yeah, it is funny watching a franchise like this that's just permeated through pop culture so much. Like, in the course of, like, 24 or 48 hours, I watched Close Encounters of the Third Kind and The Karate Kid for the first time. And both of them, there were so many, like, Simpsons, Family Guy, other movie references that I was like, ah! Mm. But, of course, most of them, it's pretty clear when something is referencing The Karate Kid, generally speaking. And Close Encounters had a few more, but first film, 1984, The Karate Kid. Who's it directed by?
I don't know his name. What's his name?
John G. Avildsen. And where have we heard that name before?
He is, of course, the famed director of Rocky V and Rocky as well.
So it's funny. There's a lot of obvious comparisons to Rocky with this franchise, or specifically the first film. You know, the plot similarities, but also the fact directed by the same guy, music by the same guy. Pretty much everyone involved in writing or acting in The Karate Kid has joked at some point about how it's a ripoff of Rocky, and Sylvester Stallone has also commented on The Karate Kid being a ripoff of Rocky. All in good fun. Like, no one's actually mad at it. It's just like, oh yeah, like, John G. Avildsen certainly has a type. What is The Karate Kid about, AJ?
It is about a young boy named Daniel LaRusso. Yes, I remember his name. And him and his single mother moved to California from Jersey, New Jersey. He's got an accent. He's played by Ralph Macchio.
Macchio,
I beg your pardon. Someone who I think my whole life I've only known as being the actor from those famous movies I haven't seen. Seen him in anything else before. So he moves with his mum to LA, and he's somewhat of a karate novice, but he gets in sort of on the bad side of bullies at his school, may or maybe not because he likes a girl that they also like. And so he's getting beaten up quite a lot, like probably more than your average teenager gets beaten up when he moves to a new place.
Oh, I don't know. How often have you... I remember when I, in 2014, when I was 21 and I moved to Auckland, and I broke my first bone within a week. I was drunk and fell down some stairs.
Right. That's not The Karate Kid. That's Drunken Master, bro.
Hey, that's a very good reference.
Daniel LaRusso soon learns that the maintenance man that lives in his building, an elderly Japanese man named Mr. Miyagi, is actually a karate experte.
Wow.
And he's like, hey, tell you what about this? These kids, you'll beat them in a tournament that's coming up, and if you succeed at that, they've agreed to leave you alone for the rest of your life. These other kids being part of the Cobra Kai dojo, which I thought was just the blonde dude's name before watching this franchise. I just thought his name was Cobra Kai. It's like Johnny some shit.
Mm.
Yeah, and so he trains. He learns how to do crane poses. He kisses on his girlie. And then not a lot happens. He just sort of gets good at karate and beats the bad guys. He hurts his leg, and they sweep the leg. They sweep the leg, and you think he's down for the count. But then he's like, actually, I can do the crane thing. He does the crane thing. The film ends 24 seconds later. It just cuts. It just freeze frames after after the bad guys are defeated, we don't get a next day, like, you know, epilogue. Mm. It is over, we're out, and this is the high point of the franchise.
Yeah.
because this is a franchise that, you know what I was thinking? This is a very season one film franchise, Fortnite's franchise. This is a film franchise Fortnite's episode where we're talking about a franchise that has a really influential first film, and then they kind of just, maybe not each is worse than the last, but they're all not that great.
I think
great.
That's true.
I think three is better than two, but we'll talk about
it. Yeah, well, you were. We'll talk about it. It's funny you mentioned...
I don't know, it just feels vintage, you know? Yeah. This feels vintage film franchise.
And, you know, maybe this won't be the only tie to season one that we'll be talking about on this episode. Tune in to the... Stay listening to the end of the episode. Don't just skip to the end of the episode. I know who you are.
Don't do that.
I know who you are.
Don't do
but
that.
But also, fun fact, we are recording this on the 6th of June, 2023. I mean, it's the 10th of June. I was looking at the 6th and I saw the June. We are recording this
on the 6th of October.
On the 6th of October, Major. Yes, the 10th of June, which is, of course, the 6-year anniversary of the first episode of the podcast. 7-year anniversary.
First episode of film franchise Fortnite.
Yeah. Yeah, there was one stupid episode. I started listening to it, but I just couldn't get over the pencil scratchings.
The pencil scratchings. Oh, that's so good. Yeah.
What did you think of the film?
I quite liked this film, Richard. I don't want to be too dramatic, but I thought it was very good. I thought that it was very simple, but I really liked it. I came to very much care for the heroes involved. I very much cared for Daniel-san, and I very much cared for Miyagi-san. There's a few choice scenes I'd love to discuss, that I liked it. I thought it was a good time. Not typically my kind of movie, and you know, I didn't love it, but I liked it a lot.
As we continue this conversation, AJ, I want to put a challenge to you. When we did the Terminator episode, we said no Arnold Schwarzenegger impressions, and AJ, I want to challenge you to do no racist Mr. Miyagi impressions.
Okay, I accept. I accept the challenge.
Oh my God.
I'm going to ace the challenge.
Let's see if he can do it. Let's see if he can do it. All right. So I talked about this recently, that of the 400 blows, even. That was like classics that you watch decades after the hype. And when there's and some films, it's like, this is just nostalgia's gotten it to this point. And yeah, The Karate Kid was one of these films that I watch, and it can go either way. And I think it fell somewhere in the middle for me, but it is interesting to see how the franchise goes on, because something like Rocky, obviously the first film won Best Picture, so like, you know, the first film was held up as this thing, but it's like you hear references to Rocky 2, 3, 4, not so much 5, all the time.
Yeah, no one says shit about Karate Kid 2.
Yeah, and so, I mean, Karate Kid 2 was true. About something like, you know, if there's a plot I just assumed it would be, and it was nothing like that. So that was, yeah, interesting. But yeah, I mean, I enjoyed the film. I don't think it's going to be one that I'm going to be... It's not going to hold that special place in my heart. And we spoke about this last week when we rolled it, but it's like, I've been wanting to do The Karate Kid for so long because I've been so keen to watch Cobra Kai. And I'm probably not going to now. Like, I was just so fascinated by how good everyone said Cobra Kai was that now I'm like, and now having watched the film, I'm like, well... Without that much of it, I might check out a couple of episodes, because maybe it's one of these things where it's like, oh, the show itself is really good, but I sort of just saw it as like, oh, it's like, because of how much you love these characters, you'll have a great time.
Because of how much I love the psychotic bully in the first film, I'll check out the spin-off series about him. Yeah, I think for so long, Cobra Kai has existed as this perfect example of something we could do for film franchise follow-ups, our Patreon show.
And now it's 5 seasons long.
And now it's 5 seasons long. You know what I think we should do instead for film franchise follow-ups?
The animated series.
Is there an animated
series?
There
is, yeah. Sorry, I was going to reveal that to you in about an hour and a half, but there you go.
No, I was thinking we should do that Community episode where they put on a production of it, because now it'll make more sense.
Oh, so I watched that the same night I watched The Karate Kid, because I now get it.
Yeah, yeah.
the one thing that I remembered from that blew my mind and again was like another thing that I was like, oh man, I want to watch The Karate Kid. If you haven't seen the episode of Community, it's the B plot of it, or the C plot even, is like Chang is goes to audition for a stage production of The Karate Kid. He auditions for Daniel LaRusso and instead gets cast as Mr. Miyagi because he was like, yeah, I'm going for the white part. Like, got a problem with that, racist? And then he's like, oh, I got cast in the Asian part. And Annie gets cast as Daniel LaRusso. And the director, played by Jason Mantzoukas, is just like riding Chang, like just belittling him the entire time. What? Meanwhile, Annie's like, hey, I just moved here. Huh? And like doing a horrible performance. And then at the end, it's revealed that this director was like, Annie, I cast you because you're the same size as the person we cast last year and I can reuse the costume. Chang, I cast you because there's a sadness to you that's perfect for the character of Mr. Miyagi. And he says, they're talking about like the idea of The Karate Kid. And he's like, Nurioki Morita was nominated for Academy Award for this. Ralph Macchio showed up. And that was the line I always remembered. But he was nominated for Best Supporting Actor for The Karate Kid.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, which is crazy. And he explains like why he's the main character, because he talks about that this was like a war vet forced to fight against his own kind during World War II, who, while he was in an internment camp, had his wife die from complications during childbirth. And, you know, as pop culture sees him now as like, well, he's kind of the platonic ideal of the kind of like mystic ethnic character that guides the white hero.
That's true. However, I did not expect him to be so cheeky and humorous. My image of Mr. Miyagi going into this was more of like a tough love situation. Like you only see him like show any affection for Daniel like maybe once a movie. But no, he's more akin to like Yoda. Where he's
which
quite
they talk about in
the remake.
Yeah, the remake.
Where he's quite cheeky. He makes a lot of jokes. And I really liked him. And the scene, so Daniel comes home or goes to get lessons from him one day and sees him like destroying a bunch of shit in his house, and it turns out he's drunk and reliving his tragic past. Mm. And fuck.
And what does he say? What does he sound like?
He says, "Oh, I'm livid, Daniel."
I thought I got him. Damn.
And it's just this really, really well.
When you said, when you're like, he's like, oh, I was like, oh my god, he's doing the accent. Oh my god, what have I done?
I think that the like, it's such a he's got such a depth to him that I totally didn't expect. And I'd seen the Community episode, so I'd heard that line, but I didn't really remember it. And it's just this really like wonderful character building scene. And Daniel helps put him to bed, and then he like bows while he's sleeping. Mm. And I loved that moment because that is, he's not doing that for Miyagi. Miyagi's asleep. Like he's genuinely like absorbed the like belief and stuff of karate, and throughout all these films, like, you know, karate is it's not for fighting, it's for defense, and it's spiritual, and everything is karate. Like they talk about karate with this reverence, and I think nowhere in the series is it as potent as that moment, I think, where he bows to a sleeping Miyagi, because it shows the viewer that Daniel is taking this very seriously, and I thought that was really cool. Mm.
But could you believe that Nurioki, or Pat Morita, was actually not the studio's first choice for Miyagi? Yeah, because he was rejected because his close association with stand-up comedy, and he has a character in his character Arnold in Happy Days. It's like he was a comedic actor. Like no,
he's Arnold from Happy Days.
Yeah,
I had no idea he was Arnold from Happy Days. That's crazy.
And the studio wanted Toshiro Mifune. Do you remember that name?
I don't.
He's in Seven Samurai.
Right.
And nice. he's a big Kurosawa actor, but he didn't speak English, so they didn't cast him.
What's Pat what's his name? Pat.
Well, I'd always heard it pronounced Pat Morita.
Right.
Morita, but in the community episode he says Pat Morita, and his first name is Noriyuki, but he generally went by Pat, but in these films he's casted as Noriyuki, quotation marks, Pat.
What's
to sort of make it more in line with his culture.
What's Sherlock Holmes's brother's name?
Moriarty. Mycroft?
Moriarty. No, his
no
enemy.
That's his enemy.
I was pronouncing it Pat Moriarty this whole time in my head.
Wow.
But it's only now saying it out loud that I've realized I've been pronouncing it that way.
Well, it's not really so much as pronouncing it as just saying the wrong word.
Well, as in, like, when I would see his name, my brain would flicker Pat Moriarty.
Right.
And now it's only now that we're talking about it that I realize it's probably not Pat Moriarty.
Yeah. Yeah, there was the casting for Daniel was also went through a lot of people. Sean Penn, Robert Downey Jr., Charlie Sheen, John Cryer, Emilio Estevez, Nick Cage, Anthony Edwards, C. Thomas Howell, Tom Cruise, Eric Stoltz, and D.B. Sweeney. Might not be the only Eric Stoltz missing out on podcasts we do in the next few weeks.
Eric
Stoltz was actually originally cast as Medea.
Wow. This is a crazy joke. Shout out to the 14 people who understood that joke. No, I think that this is a very Emilio Estevez sort of role, I think. Like, this franchise, it's a mix of, there's a bit of Mighty Ducks in there. There's a bit of Rocky, as we said. I'd say, it's interesting doing this after 400 Blows and Ip Man, because there's a bit of those
it's like a combination of the two.
Kind of. Maybe not so much 400 Blows, but I don't know,
a cross between 400 Blows and Ip Man, but take out the 400 Blows.
Yeah, and Chuck and Maze Runner. One scene that I really liked in this is, so when he's training him for karate, he's basically just getting him to do chores around the house. This is where wax on, wax off comes from. He's waxing his car, and he's painting.
But then it turns out he was secretly,
which
I guess is the scene you're going to describe as.
Yeah, it was, Richard.
I was like, well, you can't just leave it as it's like, no, it's important. Why
you interrupted me mid sentence. Why would I? In what way was I leaving it?
It didn't sound like you were leading to anything.
Yeah, so the implication is he's just getting him to do a bunch of chores for him under the guise of teaching
him
but
karate. AJ, you're forgetting.
I've totally
the,
just
the pivotal
that.
Scene in the movie. Yeah. Probably actually my one of the best scenes in the movie.
My favorite scene.
I actually might talk about it now.
And it's, he basically is like, oh, you're not teaching me shit. And then he's like, all right, show me wax on, wax off. Show me painting the fence. Show me sanding the wood. Yeah. And he basically does all these moves that he's been doing over and over again for the last couple of weeks, and what do you know, they actually correlate to karate moves. And it sounds like such a simple scene saying it out loud, but the way it's pulled off is so good and so effective. And I like that Daniel's kind of mad at him, but by the end of it he's like, oh my god, you're actually,
oh my god, I'm a karate genius,
I'm a karate kid, bro. And and I really like that. And I think there's a bit toward the end of the movie where Miyagi gives Daniel a car, one of his vintage cars. And he says, you're the best friend I ever had. And I was like, damn, that's genuinely quite sweet. And what it felt like looking into, Richard, was almost an insight into a relationship, which I'm sure we won't have an opportunity to talk about anytime soon, the relationship of Dr. Emmett Brown and Martin McFly from Back to the Medea Future films. which came out after
1 year after
Karate Kid, and it feels just that old man.
The
80s
were a different time when you could just be friends with an old man.
Well, it kind of feels like that, right? Like just a very genuine friendship, and I thought that was quite sweet.
What's the last new old man, young boy friendship you saw.
Hunt for the World of People.
Yeah. And even in that, there's accusations of pedophilia.
That's true. What you can't, you can still do these stories. You just can't get through them without someone acknowledging. You have to hang a lampshade on it. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know what the pipeline of Harold and Kumar to Cobra Kai is?
No idea, but I'm glad that we're bringing yet another past franchise into the conversation.
I just thought it would be fun. So Harold and Kumar is like credited with revitalizing the career of one Neil Patrick Harris, mm-hmm. who was just a somewhat forgotten child star after his turn in Doogie Howser. And then he becomes successful and he gets cast on the show called How I Met Your Mother.
Oh.
And in a later season of How I Met Your Mother, there's actually, like, I've said this a few, like, I've gone on at length about how much I can't stand How I Met Your Mother, but because of the ending, but I did love it for years. And there are still some jokes in it that I, like, fucking love, and some moments that are just, like, so well done. And one of them is this, that Barney is having his bachelor party and he wants to have the perfect bachelor party. And so all throughout the episode, he's going on about how the Karate Kid is the story. Like, there's this running joke that he's like, oh, Star Wars is the story about like Darth Vader. And it's like, oh, this great guy. And Die Hard is about this guy who like has some cop come in and ruin his organization. And it's like, the joke is that Barney always sides with the villains in these films.
Right.
And so he talks about The Karate Kid being this incredible movie about this guy who gets through to the final round of the All Valley Karate Tournament before getting an illegal kick to the face, which we will come back to, and losing it all. And then they're like, wait a minute, do you think that Johnny Lawrence is the good guy in Karate Kid? And he's like, yeah, like, look at it. Daniel LaRusso is the real bully. And there's like heaps of articles. There was a famous sort of video essay that was like, why Daniel is the real bully. And now a lot of people have kind of adopted that as like, oh, there's this like hidden meaning to the Karate Kid. But it's like the How I Met Your Mother thing was a joke, and that video is clearly meant as a joke, but people are starting to take it seriously. But anyway, it's in this episode where this running joke is sort of happening. They talk about the Barney throwing Barney the perfect bachelor party. And so, but everything keeps on going wrong for Barney. And it's all the stuff, but then, you know, the whole idea is that it's like, oh, it was the perfect birthday party, bachelor party, you just didn't realize. But one of the things is like, oh, at my birthday party, the Karate Kid has to be there. And then Ralph Macchio shows up and he's like following them around for the whole episode. And the whole episode, Barney's like, you are not the Karate Kid. But then there's all these other things like, they get kidnapped and his ex-girlfriend shows up and one of them thought it would be fun to hire a clown.
This sounds ridiculous.
So you've got this like, but so the whole episode you've got like Barney's ex-girlfriend, this clown, and Ralph Macchio following them around. And then in the big sort of moment where it's revealed that it's like, oh, you wanted to fear for your life on this night. You wanted this to happen. And then he realizes like, oh, everything actually ended up being what I wanted it to be. And he's like, but there's one last thing. Ralph Macchio, you are not the Karate Kid. And then the clown like starts wiping his makeup off and is like, I couldn't agree more. And it was Billy Zabka, who plays Johnny Lawrence, was the clown the whole time. And it's such a fucking like great payoff to the bit. But essentially that seeing those two together again and the conversations they started having and conversations people started having about like who was the real villain of the Karate Kid pretty much birthed Cobra Kai.
Interesting. Okay, that is interesting. I find that
all because of Harold and Kumar.
Because the main reason I find that strange is because I feel like Johnny Lawrence is very clearly the villain of Karate Kid. Like, what are you talking about? Like, he beats the shit out of him. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like
I said, like, it's become one of these, like, fun little things. It's like, if you look at it, and it's like, no, there's He's very clearly the bad guy. You could argue that he's also a victim because of his trainer. And
what's the trainer's name? Do we have that written down? He has a creepy name for such a banal character. It's like
Martin Coe. Oh, no, Martin Coe's the actor's name. John Kreese.
John Kreese? You write a fictional character and you give him the surname Kreese? It grosses me out. Kreese has always been my moist, you know what I mean?
Interesting. It's K-R-E-E-S-E.
Do not get me started on moist creases because I don't want to talk about
them. Nice. But the... Yeah, the scene that opens the second film, which is Kreese belittling Johnny and saying, like, you know, you're supposed to win and all this stuff. And Mr. Miyagi apprehends him and looks like he's going to fucking kill him with a karate chop and just, like, boops his nose. That was written as the final scene of The Karate Kid. So the film wasn't originally supposed to just have that hard cut.
Why didn't they include that in the first one?
I read, like, four or five different versions of this piece of trivia that all just say, but it wasn't actually filmed until they made the second film.
Right. It'd be a better ending to the first film than start to the second film. Especially because majority of it takes place 6 months after that scene.
But in the How Me Mother episode, and it's been parroted elsewhere, this idea that, like, Daniel LaRusso wins with an illegal kick to the face, which, like, you watch the film, and because I'd heard this before, I finished the film and I was like, how is that allowed? But then I did some more research on it and, like, what's allowed in karate and stuff. And Ralph Macchio was asked about it, I think, when the first season of Cobra Kai was coming out. He was on Jimmy Fallon and he was asked about it. And he said, here's my theory. No, here's the truth. Here's the truth. It's been a while and I've been fighting off these theories a long time. Listen, Mr. Miyagi was the ultimate teacher, so, and LaRusso had him as his trainer, and as the superior trainer, he's basically the human Yoda. You don't bet against Yoda, you don't bet against Miyagi. That's number one. Number two, I would say, is that LaRusso, how did he train? He trained over a couple of weeks' time by household chores, never having the ability of privilege to have a sparring partner. His opponent there was, like, you know, in combat ready training for years for this event. And then he pointed out the illegal leg sweep that one of the Cobra Kai fighters does and says, if you look at the tape, not only does the ref say point winner, a win is a win. Johnny literally arguably charged, ran into the kick. LaRusso had nothing to do but defend himself. And
well, they talk about that in the film, don't they? They say, like, oh, what's, you know, nothing, you don't want to be in the way of his.
Yeah. And
what, his head was in the way of your foot or whatever.
I read, like, an analysis that's like, yeah, there's a thing that's passed around a lot that's like, oh, earlier in the film they say anything above the neck is illegal or whatever, but it's like that scene doesn't exist. And there's like a kick to the face in an earlier round that is countered, and it's like, yeah, there's nothing that says they can't do that.
Just kicks to the faces are allowed. That's the write up.
That's where I got with that.
Interesting.
And it's funny you brought up Johnny Lawrence's name, because I think Billy Zabka or William Zabka is, like, a cooler name for a villain.
It's like
the potential names he could have had goes Cobra Kai at the top, Billy Zabka in the middle, and then Johnny Lawrence at the bottom.
Like how, like, Lizzie McGuire is a more normal name than Hilary Duff. Or Dom Toretto is a more normal name than Vin Diesel.
Yeah, and Mark Sinclair is a more normal name than Vin Diesel.
Agreed.
That was why he changed it.
Naming yourself Diesel. God. All right. What's next?
What do you think it has on Rotten Tomatoes before we move on?
95%.
89%.
Yeah. It's pretty reasonable.
Yeah. Wikipedia, we do dumb IMDb trivia a lot, but I wanted to do some funny Wikipedia pulls. Mm-hmm. And so if you go on the Wikipedia page, we've done Wikipedia pages like when we covered The Devil Wears Prada for our Patreon podcast, it was like one of the most detailed Wikipedia pages I've ever seen.
Weirdly detailed.
This one has a section called cultural influence. And so this is where you would put, you know, like all the references and, you know, and, and everything. It's one sentence. It just says, the series has been credited for popularizing karate in the United States.
I mean, it probably has, right?
Yeah, it's like, okay. also, yeah, some of you listening might be confused. As just to clear this up now, we are not talking about the DC Comics character called Karate Kid. We're talking about the films.
I actually have been. I've been switching back and forth between talking about the two of them.
Yeah, but the filmmakers actually got special permission from DC to use the title.
Oh, DC came first. Interesting.
AJ, if I were to ask you what happened with the Karate Kid 2 years later in 1986, what would you say?
Well, I'd tell you that 2 years later, 6 months after the end of the first of the climactic duel in the first film,
the film came out, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. Karate Kid 2. Part two, I beg your pardon. And basically, right off the bat, he announces that him and the girl from the first one have broken up, which happens, spoilers, in the next one as well. And it was so annoying because so much of the first film is built around their chemistry. For teenage actors, they've got game. Like, they're very good at flirting. And I very
Elizabeth
much
Shue
like,
played the...
Elizabeth Shue. I very much bought into their relationship, and then the start of Karate Kid 2 is just like, oh, she says she's in love with some jock over in college. And it's like, all right, well, clearly you couldn't get Elizabeth Shue or didn't want Elizabeth Shue for this one. And you
Elizabeth Shue declined to return, I believe.
And you wanted another love interest to be involved. So this is very similar. This is one of our sequels that we haven't talked about one of these in a while, I don't think, where it's a Hangover 2 sequel, where it's the same thing, but in a different location. Much like Ace Ventura before him, or after him, I guess. It's basically what if Karate Kid, but actually in Japan, because Mr. Miyagi finds out that some forgotten love of his, the reason he left Okinawa was because he was in love with this woman, his best friend's arranged bride, and so he left, and he's received a letter that his father is ill, so he must return to Okinawa, face his angry best friend who literally wants to murder him, and this woman that he used to have a thing with, and Daniel LaRusso's like, yo, Mr. Miyagi, you gotta let me come with you. Oh my god, you gotta let me go, Mr. Miyagi. You didn't say we couldn't do
voices.
You didn't say, yeah, I was doing John Travolta from the South Park episode. Where he,
the bartender even looks like John Travolta. Yeah, looks like.
Yeah, so you didn't say I couldn't do Ralph Macchio impressions, so that was the best I got.
Roll the tape back. I actually did say that.
Fuck. So they go to Okinawa, and basically Daniel LaRusso just gets the shit kicked out of him from the bad guy's cronies. Like the whole movie, he's just avoiding this. But he also falls in love with a young Japanese woman. And the big bad guy is like, Miyagi, you have to fight me or else I'll just bulldoze this whole village that your girlfriend lives in. But instead of fighting, there's a big storm that comes out of nowhere. and what Richard some may call, I don't know, an act of God or a deus ex machina. And it basically unites them all together. And so they decide not to fight because this freak storm came out of nowhere and happened. And yeah, that's basically it, I think. Am I missing anything?
No.
Here's what I didn't like about The Karate Kid Part 2, right? So Mr. Miyagi, man, he's like this war vet, as you say, forced to fight against his own people. His wife died from complications of childbirth. And now this movie's like, oh, but he had another love of his life. It's so cheap, right? Like that and the ditching Elizabeth Shue or writing her out. They're both examples of just like no respect for the original film, I think. I thought this one was real bad. What do you think?
Yeah, I my enjoyment of the series has finished by this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, this one was also directed by John G. Avildsen.
Oh, really?
Interestingly. Yeah,
I also directed assumed. Really? He did the whole fucking trilogy. This dude does not know how to do respectful sequels to his own films.
It's weird, eh? Like, yeah, he made the worst Rocky sequel.
Yeah.
Because Stallone did the other ones. But yeah, it's wild stuff, wild stuff. Mm. One thing that I was surprised by as well with this franchise is that the first one quite famously uses "You're the Best" by Joe Esposito. Mm-hmm. You're the best
around. Yeah. Yep.
And yeah, it's like that feels like that should be this franchise's Eye of the Tiger or Gonna Fly Now, which is the other song that's used in every Rocky movie. But yeah, it's just that, it's just one and done from the...
Oh, they have soundalikes though. They're just not, yeah, they didn't stand the test of time.
Yeah, I actually brought this up because I forgot to bring it up in the first one. It was an interesting talking point, I thought, but that's, I don't really have much to say about You're the Best by Joey Esposito in regards to the second film. But the, it was written for Rocky 3, interestingly.
Wow.
Which is, and then lost out to Survivor, who did Eye of the Tiger, but also interestingly wrote the main theme for Karate Kid. But the You're the Best, because there's a line there, it's like, it's his first, you know, time in the All Valley Karate Tournament, and it goes, history repeats itself, try and you'll succeed. And it's like, it's not history repeating itself, it's the first time he's done it, but it's because it's supposed to be Rocky versus Clubber Lang 2.
Right, and it would have made sense to put it in Karate Kid Part 2.
Yeah.
Over Karate Kid Part 1.
Because it's literally about history repeating itself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Did I... Yeah, so this one has 44% on Rotten Tomatoes. I can't remember if I said that.
I think it deserves that.
Yeah, this is a pretty steep decline, I think you'll notice.
That's what I'm saying, man. It's such a bummer to, because Karate Kid, it's like, oh, it's a franchise, and like we eat franchises here at Cold Popshire. And then it's
for breakfast.
For breakfast, and then immediately from the second film.
Nothing.
And then immediately from the second film, it's just like, just everything about it just isn't as good. Like, I do you know what I did? I put probably the last half an hour on double speed. Or 1.2 point, whatever, you know, 1.5 speed. Because I was just like, this is fucking boring and I want to get over it. And there's the scene with the storm where they're like saving all these people from the storm. And I was like, this is ridiculous. Like, as psychotic as the bullies were in the first one, it feels so strange to have like Daniel LaRusso like climbing a windmill in the middle of a storm to save, you know, like these truly, yeah, like death defying moments. It just feels so like out of the box that they're playing in, you know?
Yeah. Like, so part, because originally I was like you sort of said, it's like, oh, it's a classic sequel trope we've seen that do the same film in a different location. But I was like, I can't believe this isn't just LaRusso v. Lawrence 2.
Right. Yeah,
I was like, of course it's going to be a rematch. Mm. It's called, like, even the fact that it's called Part 2 feels like it's destined to be a rematch. And then while reading up about the first film as well, it's like, oh, okay, Zabka reprises his role in the sequel. And it's like, oh, yeah, of course. But it's like, no, he just fucks off after the start.
Yeah, yeah. Probably the best scene in the film, that opening.
Yeah, I was shocked by.
God, imagine if they'd given it to the ending of the first film. The second film would have nothing.
Yeah.
Have nothing to go with.
There's another sort of tropey kind of thing that the sequel that then leads on to the second, to the continued sequels, but that, like, it's not a spin-off, but it's like a refocusing of the main character kind of, or like that it becomes the Miyagi series.
Yeah,
from this film, like he's very much a supporting character in the first one, but then by the fourth film, he's the one that carries over. The Cobra Kai creators refer to Cobra Kai as taking place in the Miyagi-verse, and
as opposed to the Jackie Chan one.
Yeah, so they say that like any person who ever met Mr. Miyagi or interacted with him can appear in Cobra Kai.
Right. Okay, that's interesting.
Which I guess is their way of being like, Hillary Swank might show up.
You never know. We may have scored Hillary Swank, someone 10 times more famous than Ralph Macchio by this point. Isn't that funny?
Yeah. Yeah, so who is Hillary Swank? Well, let's skip to film 4 to find out. No, the Karate Kid Part 3 came out 3 years later.
Damn.
We didn't talk about French Wise. Sorry.
Sorry. Yeah, you're right. We didn't. But also, nah, like,
we don't need to. It was big. Big film.
Like, there you go. It's almost like the segment in general doesn't really need to be
revisited. It's money.
Each episode. But the 3 years. Sorry, when did the first one come out?
84, 86, 89.
So how many years is that all up?
5 years.
Five years.
2 year gap and then 3 year gap.
And Ralph Macchio looks exactly the same in 3 as he does in 1, I reckon.
Well, how old do you think he is in 1?
16.
He's 22 in the first film.
What the fuck? This dude just look really... Because I looked at him up recently and he's in like his 60s now. And I was like, and he's in his 60s? Like, I was genuinely like...
Yeah, he's 61 now.
Well, how is he? Well, I was doing the maths in my head. I mustn't have done the maths enough because that shocked me. Oh my God. So he's like our age by the... Well, a little bit younger than us by the third film. God, he still looks so young. That's crazy. So,
fun fact, in this film, he doesn't have a... In the third film, he doesn't have a love interest. He has a girl who they become very close friends. It was rewritten at the last moment to not be a... to not be a romantic story because they cast this girl, Robin Lively, who was 16 at the time of filming, and they were like, maybe we shouldn't have her be a romantic interest to the 27-year-old Ralph Macchio, whose character is supposed to be 17.
Just cast someone older, you fuckwits. What the hell is going on? That's so
okay,
awkward.
No, in their defense, they made the right call. Like, I
didn't realize it wasn't romantic until you just said it then. I just wasn't paying enough attention, I guess.
But yeah, I mean, like, a lot of people would just be like, sorry, Macchio, you just gotta kiss the girl 11 years your junior who is underage.
Yeah. What's this one have on Rotten Tomatoes?
What would you guess?
My heart says it's considered better than part 2, but my brain says that's not how Rotten Tomatoes
But your brain says, AJ, you were high when you watched this.
Hey, I was high when I watched all of these, Richard, so it's an even playing field.
Okay.
What I'm saying there is that 2 was bad enough that even being high couldn't save it, while 3 I managed to get on board with for a bit.
It has 13%.
Really? That's so low. That's so sad. I thought this one was great.
Also,
I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah. What's it about?
All right. So here's what it's about, everybody. They come back from Okinawa, each film taking place moments after the last.
Well, Ralph Macchio started to show his age, finally.
And basically, they're like, hey, let's take some time off karate for a bit. And so they open a bonsai tree shop together and they become partners. And I was just watching
very,
this.
It's very, what is it, like, Stolen Kisses or... What's the one where he has like the flower dying at the start?
Bed and Board.
Bed and Board, yeah. It's very Bed and Board. It's very Doinal.
And it's there's this moment where he's like, oh, Mr. Miyagi, I got you this deed to this rundown shop. And he's like, and Mr. Miyagi says, Daniel-san, there's only one thing missing from this contract. And Daniel's like, yo, what is it? What's missing from the contract? I gotta, like, up the impression of one character since I can't do the other. And he's like...
But the only reason being that I've forbidden you.
Yeah, yeah, not because I'm socially conscious or anything. And Mr. Miyagi's like, it's missing your signature next to mine. Let's be partners. And they bow, and I was like, fuck yeah, I cheered, man. I was like, yes! Anyway, meanwhile, all this is happening. John Kreese. Also, two Johns? A John and a Johnny? And they're like quite close together in the story?
Yeah.
He is so mad that his life has fallen apart since Miyagi honked his nose at the start of the second film. Legitimately, I think that's the implication. He like humiliated him, basically.
Yeah.
And so he decides he's going to put them down, and he teams up with a bunch of like fucking psychopaths bent on murdering children, basically.
Bunch of Stephen King bullies.
Yeah, yeah. And they go, right, we're going to have this crazy tournament that little Danny LaRusso, little 15-year-old Danny LaRusso, is not going to be able to fucking resist, because it'll be about him defending his title from the fight that was only a year earlier and not 5 years earlier, as it may weirdly feel like. It feels like it was 5 years ago.
Feels like it happened over 40 years ago.
And he's like, all right, so we'll do this. And so they bring in this, like, this other karate kid who the only thing he's got on it is they're like, they're pretty sure he could beat Daniel LaRusso. Like, that's it. They're just pretty sure. And they're like, yeah, all right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to poison... We're gonna poison the relationship of Danny and Miyagi. Then I, one of the guys that John Kreese is fraternizing with, is like, and then I'll step in and train him. And I'll train him like real bad. Like, I'll basically turn him into evil evil Daniel LaRusso. And then you'll be able to defeat him. And so all this kind of goes ahead. Daniel's like, oh, we should enter this tournament, and Mr. Miyagi's like, no, you should. You don't have anything to defend. And then he keeps getting beaten up again. And bear in mind, this is from the 6 month time jump in Karate Kid 2 to now. This has just been a continuous string of Daniel LaRusso.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Turning up places, getting off a plane, and immediately getting like punched in the gut. Like, all these people just fucking attacking him. It's crazy. And he's like, all right, they go to get. All right, it gets complicated. There's some weird stuff in these movies. So Daniel and the girl who works at the pottery place across the street from them, they go to find this bonsai tree that Mr. Miyagi planted years and years ago, because they've run out of bonsai trees. And it's in this perilous, like, cliff face, and it's real scary, them going down there. And then the bad guys turn up, and they, like, draw the ropes up, and they only put the ropes down if they sign the release form that says that he'll fight in the tournament. Something I imagine you could probably just not show up to on the night, and it would be like, oh, because he's not fighting then. And so he's forced to sign it. Mr. Miyagi's like, oh, you shouldn't have signed it. And he's like, you got to teach me how to sweep. He's like, you got to teach me how to sweep, man. Do you know how to sweep? And then he's like, yeah, I know how to sweep. He comes back with a broom. And in what this is the thing I related to the most in this whole franchise, as Mr. Miyagi basically goes, oh, I've got a fucking killer bit for this. He's like, oh, I know how to sweep. Wait right here. Goes off screen, comes back with a broom and starts sweeping the floor. And he says, look, Daniel, son, sweep, sweep, sweep. And Daniel loses his shit at this. And Mr. Miyagi's like, fuck, I was just trying to be funny, man. I'm so sorry. He doesn't. Daniel leaves. But Mr. Miyagi clearly just experiencing what I experience all the time, which is thinking something will be a funny joke. And it ends up requiring...
Dialone syndrome.
Yeah. It's very serious conversations. and so Daniel goes to this bad guy, he gets trained, but it's like evil karate. It's like you have to kill people, basically. Like, it goes, he gets everything he thought he learned. And then what happens in the end? They fight and he goes back to do you remember?
Yeah, it's the same ending as the other one.
Yeah, basically.
So
everything turns out all right.
You quite liked this one. You were really into the plot of it.
Mm.
Maybe you might have liked it even more if they went with the original plot.
Oh my god.
Yeah. So Robert Mark Carman, who wrote the first film as like a semi-autobiographical thing.
Wow.
That he actually learnt this, like learnt karate when he was 17 from this guy who was a student of someone named Miyagi. But he originally wanted the Karate Kid 3 to be a prequel with, get this, Daniel and Mr. Miyagi traveling to 16th century China.
Yes! Yes! Just in like in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles,
Ninja
3.
Turtles 3. Yeah. In a dream and meeting Miyagi's ancestors.
Fuck, man. Like, you know, what do you choose between like kind of a boring, like organic third sequel or second sequel? Or do you like embrace jumping the shark with something like that and do go weird, you know?
Yeah, fuck it.
Fuck
Who
it.
Gives a shit? Just go
Who
nuts.
Gives a fuck, yeah.
There. Didn't like this one. I did not see what you saw on it. You were messaging me being like, bro, this one's actually real good. It's real hype. And I was like, oh, cool. You know, I'm excited to go home and watch it then. And then you're like, bro, I'm high, but this the film, man. And I was like, oh, okay, I'm not going to enjoy it then.
Here's what I liked about it is that
I was under the influence of drugs.
Basically, what I did was
incredibly warped.
I smoked some of the illegal drug marijuana and was able to then draw more enjoyment from the text than maybe was achieved by the director. No, I think what I liked about it is like, even through the second film, I just like really grown to love the relationship between Miyagi and Daniel, and like seeing them open a store together, like it could have been like a fucking Stardew Valley esque, like they just open a store together. There's no karate in it. Like I would have been all down for that. Like I don't know.
The Bonsai Kid.
Yeah, the Bonsai Kid, the Bonsai Boys.
That's pretty good.
That's what I where I would have gone. I don't know. I just enjoyed the camaraderie of them. I thought they're very harrowing scenes where they're abseiling down the cliffs maybe weren't as great as I was hoping they would be when the scene was starting, but I don't know. What do you want me to say? So defensive out of nowhere, like fuck you Richard, what do you want me to say about that?
Well, John G. Avildsen didn't like the film in 2015. He said that it was a horrible imitation of the original, hastily written and sloppily rewritten. Ralph Macchio was disappointed with the film. He said it felt like the LaRusso character never went forward and felt like we were redoing the first movie in a cartoon kind of a sense without the heart and soul.
Wow. Yeah.
Avildsen also said it will baffle those who haven't seen the first two films and insult those who have.
Imagine if I was just like, yeah, okay, you've convinced me.
Have you ever, I mean, like you seem so enamored with it, but have you ever had a Miyagi Daniel like relationship?
I was thinking about this recently that I've always had, like, in every job I've had like a big brother figure, like every office job I've had a big brother character, at least
who's always watching you kind of thing.
Somewhat. No, not that kind of big brother. Not cool. Somewhere between Big Brother and Miyagi. No, I don't know, like I've had plenty of like mentors before, but I've never learned karate. Mum and dad wouldn't allow that. It was too spiritual, apparently.
Did you want to learn karate at one point?
I vaguely remember wanting to learn.
Well, just everywhere I went, I was just getting beaten up as soon as I got there.
I vaguely remember wanting to learn karate when I was maybe like 6 or 7. And my parents looking into it and being like, sorry, it's of the devil.
Yeah.
And they'd probably say the same thing now.
Wise people.
That's true.
So that's why you'd never seen The Karate Kid.
Honestly, it could be a reason why it was never put on. Although we watch Disney's Hercules all the time, which literally has other gods in it. So I don't know. My parents have got weird double standards for this sort of thing.
Wow. Don't usually get that from religious people. Anything else you want to say about Karate Kid 3?
Oh, it's a good time, you know? Like, it's just a...
Look, it's not going to win any Oscars,
turn-your-brain-off movie. No, nothing else to say.
All right. Well, we're on to the next Karate Kid, which is actually called The Next Karate Kid. Funnily enough, after running the Karate Kid franchise into the ground with parts 2 and 3, John G. Avildsen returned to the franchise that got him nominated for Best Director, and the next film he made after part 3 was Rocky IV.
I thought you were going to say he was the director of The Next Karate Kid. And I was like, oh no, my God,
The Next Karate Kid was directed by Christopher Kane.
What else has he done?
Do you recognize that name?
Mr. Christopher
you
Kane.
You shouldn't.
He played a surly game.
Because he hasn't covered any of his films.
When all the kids in the street, they like to do the same.
Oh, he's Dean Kane's dad.
Dean Kane? Cool. Well, Richard, I've been doing a lot of talking. Would you want to tell us what this one's about?
No, you're not getting off there.
You do that to me all the time.
Well, it's funnier when I do it. When you do it, it's just sad. This time, instead of being the Karate Kid, it's the Karate Girl.
The Karate Girl Kid.
I dropped a pen. Sorry, while I'm getting it, AJ, could you explain the plot?
All right, so basically there's this karate girl.
And she's a kid.
Hilary Swank is the new Karate Kid, and it's like Mr. Miyagi's just like in town or something. Like he's...
Yeah. it's a commendation for for his like combat
right.
team. It's a World War II.
And basically he bonds with this young woman because, as she expressly explains in dialogue, her parents died in a car crash a few years ago. Remember, and one of the greatest examples, one of the quintessential examples of failing the dead parents test.
The dead parents test.
Like yeah. You could like we make fun of it a lot. This is like crisp. This is a crisp failure of the dead parents test. This is literally like her grandmother is like, Susan, and she's like, don't call me Susan. My name's Julie. My Susan was my mother. She died in a car accident. And it's like, you're saying this to people who know it. It's for us. Richard.
To your mum's mum.
It's so bad. But basically, there's some guys creeping on her. So Mr. Miyagi is like, hey, I'll teach you karate. Teaches her karate. And so I said I watched all of these high. I started this one a little buzzed and then paused it, fell asleep, woke up the next morning.
Sobered right
up. Woke up the next morning, watched this one in the cold, sober light of day. And
loved it.
No, I hated it. I thought it was real bad. But this is what there's this one thing that happened in this movie where I was like, am I still stoned? Because this is the most out of nowhere thing where like they go to the dance. She's got like a love interest who's like this guy that's like wooing her. They go to the like prom together, and then a bunch of the bad guys jump off the roof of the prom on like bungee cords, and they like crash into some of the decorum. And I never really like caught up with what was happening in that scene, but it feels like something that would happen while you're stoned and you'd be like, what is, have I changed movie accidentally? Like, it was such a weird, do you remember that moment?
It didn't really stick out to me.
Wow. All right. This movie has the worst.
I was just like, the whole time I was like, where's the bungee jumps?
Yeah, right. I get you. There's a scene in this where she tries to kill a cockroach and a bunch of monks get mad at her. There's a scene in it where she finds a praying mantis and brings it back to them, and they're like, yep, you did a good job. I found she was quite a contradiction of a character, because they want her to be like this like shut off, you know, or like keeps to herself kind of bookwormy teenager. But then there's also a lot of stuff in it about how she's like comments about how much makeup she's like, oh, you can never have too much makeup, and like the clothes she's wearing are like cheerleader clothes, I think, a lot of the time.
Yeah, do you know what that is?
What,
male writers?
Yeah, right, because it's
male director.
It's like they want her
not
to,
knowing how to write women.
They want her to be like a high school girl, like your typical like sort of cheerleader type. But then they also want her to be this type of woman who every woman I've met like that in real life has been pretty uninterested in all these things. Yeah, you're so right. It's such a poorly like constructed character.
Well, yeah. It's just not knowing how to write a woman. It's like they wrote a Karate Kid movie, and then they're like, oh, and the
it's a girl!
It's a girl. She's into makeup.
Yeah, yeah. The movie ends with, once again, like, and side note, for all the films, they're like karate instructor, the evil karate instructor who's always an adult man in his mid-50s is like hell-bent on murdering these children. And it's even weirder in this because it's like a little girl. So it's like, what the fuck is wrong with you, man? And it ends with sort of the showdown that they have. Is there, there's like fire going on? It's real dramatic. Mm. And basically the girl just fights all the guys and defeats them. And then Mr. Miyagi like sort of apprehends the big bad guy, and she's like, admit it, Mr. Miyagi, you liked kicking butt. And he's like, no, Julie-san, karate is not for fighting is no good. And she's like, okay, but you kicked butt, admit it. And he's like, fighting is bad, but if you have to fight, win. And I was like, this is character assassination. You know what I mean? Like you build this whole and Pat Moriarty returns to the role. And what I can only assume is like a guy who's not getting a lot of work and is like, yeah, I'll do another Karate Kid. But it just felt so antithetical to like the Mr. Miyagi that had been built up so exquisitely over the previous three films. And it's like, so he just thinks like he secretly does think fighting is cool. I don't know. It felt like a complete misreading of the character, and yeah, I don't know, that was my thoughts.
Yeah, I'm just looking at what he was doing around this time. The same year as the next Karate Kid, he played Mr. Yoshi in The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. He was in Even Cowgirls Get the Blues. Oh my god, I should have said that. I should have brought that up.
What?
Don't look up the name of Pat Morita's character in Even Cowgirls Get the Blues. Worst mistake of my life. It's directed by Gus Van Sant. It stars Uma Thurman, Keanu Reeves, John Hurt.
What the hell?
Rain Phoenix.
All right, so what does this have on Roddy T's?
Even Cowgirls Get the Blues, no. Or the next Karate Kid?
The next Karate Kid.
Well, now I'm curious about what this has. Even Cowgirls Get the Blues has a high, let me tell you this, has a higher Rotten Tomatoes score than the next Karate Kid. Even Cowgirls Get the Blues has 17%.
What are we talking for next Karate Kid, like under 10? Are we talking 9%?
Nope.
Oh, thank God.
We're talking 7%.
It's pretty unremarkable. It's more unremarkable than it is like expressly bad, but I also think it's easily the worst of the franchise and quite the...
Quite the
black mark.
Like,
it.
This is the kind of film that I can imagine having seen this on TV and
at like 1 PM during the school holidays.
Yeah, and this would be the only Karate Kid film I've seen. Similar to how I am with Home Alone 3.
And you'd grow up thinking this is what the Karate Kid is. You're like, yeah, I've seen the Karate Kid. It's got like Hilary Swank in it.
Yeah, but it has that kind of vibe. Just like, I mean, it's very 1984, but like the way it's shot, the dialogue, everything like that, it is that like 1 PM school holidays kind of movie that you like, even as a, you know, 7-year-old, you kind of pay attention to.
Mm.
When there was no TikTok to scroll, there was no Twitter to look through. All you had was just your imagination, and even then, you could not bring yourself to concentrate on the next Karate Kid.
Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, it is. In spite of all the terrible reviews and stuff, this is like Hilary Swank's big break. It was her first theatrical appearance in a starring role, which is like a couple of qualifiers. So it's like, well, if it's not her first film, just don't point it out. Like, she was in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the movie.
And she was, what, probably a year away from Boys Don't Cry, which is like...
She was 5 years away from Boys Don't Cry.
That's a much more well-regarded film.
But I mean, I don't know that she would have got Boys Don't Cry without this.
You reckon?
Yeah, I mean, well, like it was a theatrical starring role.
And she's not bad in it either, like, right? Like, she's not the worst Karate Kid. she's not as good as Ralph Macchio, but we've got one more to talk about.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about it now?
Let's talk about it now, Richard.
Go for it.
The Karate Kid remake came out in 2010.
Okay.
Directed by Christopher Nolan.
Wait a minute. I'm looking at the Wikipedia page for Inception.
I beg your pardon.
No, it was directed by Harold Zwart.
Yes. If there was ever a 1 p.m. on school holidays movie director name, it's Harold Zwart.
It's H-A-R-A-L-D, Harald Z-W-A-R-T.
I take it all back. Harald that changes it completely. Zwart. Yeah,
Whose next film after this would be The Mortal Instruments, City of Bones.
What does This Karate Kid have on Rotten Tomatoes? I'm very curious about this. I was a very good boy.
It should be called This Karate Kid. That's a good title. Well, actually, it shouldn't be called that.
We'll talk about titles because there's a very fucking obvious title this movie should have had that it does not have. But tell me the Rotten Tomatoes score first because I thought if this is surprisingly high, wouldn't surprise me. Sorry, what? If this surprises you with how high it is, wouldn't surprise me that much because of how I was.
Okay, what do you think it has?
It can't be that high, can it? It's got to be like 45.
It's actually surprisingly high. It's 66.
66? Yeah, this is a 66% movie. I thought this was pretty...
It's the second highest rated Karate Kid movie.
It's pretty... It's all right.
Cobra Kai has like 100%. Right. So.
I thought it was okay. Like, I went into it very dour. And as soon as it started and you see Jaden Smith, I was like, oh my God, I forgot what Jaden Smith vehicles looked like. Because you can see Jaden Smith on camera recalling his lines as he's delivering them. Like, he is so bad, man. He's so bad. Is he any better these days? He kind of didn't do anything for a while. But
So he was 12 in this film.
Yeah, well, let's dunk on him some more than... Yeah.
Wow.
I just thought he was so distractingly bad in this. And that's diametrically opposed by how surprisingly good Jackie Chan is in this, I thought. Like,
yeah, he's all right.
Like, I never thought of Jackie Chan as a particularly strong actor either. Like, the abilities he has are very impressive, but they're not necessarily... acting ability.
Yeah. I remember when this film came out, there was all these things about because everyone was like, oh no, he's too young to play Mr. Miyagi. And people were like, he's actually older than Pat Morita was
really?
In the original film. No, he's 3 years younger. Like,
right. So,
he's about the same age, but it is like, no, that's just wrong. I remember reading that at the time.
My image when I think of Jackie Chan is that he's like an over the hill, like, grey-haired old has-been now.
Yeah.
And I feel like I thought that in 2010. But when he shows up in this, I was like, he looks like he's
Who's the stud?
He looks like he's, like, in his mid-40s. Like, he looks great, I thought.
Yeah, he's, like,
it's like
50.
In his...
I did look it up. He's 56 in the film.
My image of Jackie Chan at this time was much older than he apparently was.
Well, it's the same thing we sort of experienced with... Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
That was like, I was like, this dude is decrepit.
Yeah.
Harrison Ford will be dead within the year
from
of old age.
King of the Crystal Skull.
Yeah, when that came out. And now I look at him, I'm like, he looks great.
Yeah.
He still looks great.
He looks hot. I would.
Yeah.
What
is this one about?
Okay, so it's very much the plot of the first one with a few things changed. One of them.
Well, but there's obvious things you don't change. He does. He's a kid. He does karate.
Well, let me stop you there. Like, if it's funny that like the original Karate Kid was about this guy who learns karate, but he's 22. He's not really a kid. And in this one, it's like, well, we fixed that. We've cast a 12-year-old, so literally 10 years younger than Ralph Macchio. So we've got the kid part, but there's
cool. So you're gonna teach him karate?
No, Richard. I'm here to reveal to you that karate is not even spoken aloud in the dialogue in this film. He learns kung fu, and I'd heard this before. Oh, did you know they didn't even put karate in the new Karate Kid movie? So I went into this being like, oh, there must be a scene where someone's like, hey, look at you, Karate Kid, and he's like, actually, it's kung fu. That would honestly be enough for me. I'd be like, right, yeah, it's a misnomer. It's an intentional thing, right?
Yeah, there is a scene in the film where his mum, who's not played by Jada Pinkett Smith,
yeah.
yeah, says something about him learning karate, and he corrects it. So
oh, it is in there.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. She doesn't call him a karate kid.
Well, she should, because that's all it needed to cross the line. Because we talk about titles a lot on this podcast, Richard, and what on earth stopped them from just calling it the Kung Fu Kid? You call it the Kung Fu Kid, no one who knows the Karate Kid is going to not click that it's related to it. I am baffled that they didn't just call this the Kung Fu Kid. I think here's my theory for what happened. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
I reckon they cast Jaden Smith. They're like, big name right now. He's going to be massive. He's going to be huge. We'll get him while he's still easy to cast and things, right? And they're like, all right, well, just do a straight remake of the Karate Kid. Great. And they're like, oh, we could get Jackie Chan for Mr. Miyagi. And then a more enlightened person in the room is like, Jackie Chan's Chinese. Like, it's not...
Karate's Japanese.
Miyagi's Japanese. Like, that's really ignorant of you to assume just... And then they're like, sorry, I've already booked Jackie Chan for the role. And they're like, well, we can't set it in Japan, you dipshit. So, all right, well, let's move the whole thing to China. So they go to China in this film. They go to China, and it's very much the same plot, but instead of being in LA, it's in China. And instead of it being karate, he learns kung fu. There's very little... There's like, the way he trains him, there's sort of like instead of the wax on wax off thing, Dre Parker, yeah, who is the name of Jaden Smith's character, his mum is always on his fucking ass about leaving his jacket on the floor instead of hanging it up. And so Mr. Han who replaces Mr.
and,
Miyagi.
And I don't mean Mr. Han from Linkin Park. There is a guy in Linkin Park who goes by Mr. Han.
Okay. So his like kung fu lesson to him is him picking up his jacket, putting it on the hanger, taking it off, picking it up again. And it's like, again, that turns out to be like secretly a kung fu lesson. So that's the main difference, I guess. And I thought, like my favorite scene in the movie is after he's been doing this ridiculous exercise where he has to put his jacket on the hanger all day, he goes home and his mum's like, how was it? Did you learn anything? And she watches as he puts the jacket on the hook and goes, no, and leaves, and she just stays fixed on the jacket. I thought quite a classy little moment in the film, I thought.
So you theorized the production of the film there. So it was one of these funny things where I read on the Wikipedia page, it's like a remake of the original Karate Kid entered development in late 2008. And I was like, fuck, all the way back in 2008. And then I remembered the film came out in 2010.
Fucking hell, man. That's like,
fuck, like 14 months of development.
Talk about development hell, bro.
So Will Smith signed on as a producer and then reworked it to be a vehicle for his son,
which I don't hate. I don't have anything necessarily
It's very Will Smith family, yeah. And Jackie Chan announced to a concert crowd in Chinatown that he was going to be playing the character of the teacher. Jackie Chan told interviewers that on set the cast would refer to the film as the Kung Fu Kid, and he believed that it would be called the Kung Fu Kid in China and maybe just stay the Karate Kid in America, which is in People's Republic of China, it's called the Kung Fu Dream or the Kung Fu Wonder. And in Japan and South Korea, the film is titled Best Kid.
Well, that's
which is which is actually the local title of the 1984 film. So it's the same title.
All right.
But yeah, it was Sony did consider changing the title of the film, but Jerry Weintraub, who was one of the producers, rejected the idea. He was also a producer on the first film.
I reckon fundamentally incorrect choice. I also reckon arguably a little bit offensive, like depending on what angle you tackle it from. Like, I think it's so bizarre. Why not just like it would be cool. It'd be like, yeah, there's the Karate Kid and the Kung Fu Kid.
Because it's also like, because, you know, the Karate Kid comes out and it's like they cast Jaden Smith, who was just Will Smith's Nepo baby, and like all this stuff, like every reason you could have to hate a remake. But it's like you call it the Kung Fu Kid and it's like, Yeah, it's kind of a we've borrowed the plot of the original. Mm. Like to slap the original title on it feels like so much more of like a "You Ruined My Childhood." Like a movie called The Kung Fu Kid, which is basically a remake of The Karate Kid, doesn't ruin your experience of The Karate Kid.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
People will think that this does, but yeah.
Do you reckon like 2010 was just before the time for of like sort of nuanced reboots? Like we have shit like that all the time now, like where something's kind of a, like The Suicide Squad, where it's like it's kind of a sequel, but it's really only just using the same actors. Like we have these sort of gray areas. I wonder if 2010 was just before
like
the
Invisible Man.
Yeah, yeah, sure. Yeah, sure. And like, 2010 was just before the time.
Well, 2010 is the same year as Nightmare on Elm Street. It was a year after the Friday the 13th one. That it was like,
there you go.
In that time of terrible remakes, like, I feel like, yeah, we don't, you know, don't necessarily hold me to this, but we don't get as many remakes now. Like, everyone always talks about, oh, everything in Hollywood's either a remake or a sequel, but like,
it's mostly sequels.
It's mostly sequels. I can't really think of that many. I mean, like, you know, there's All Quiet on the Western Front.
Well, I was going to say, Suspiria, you mentioned Invisible Man. Like, remakes are good.
Suspiria, and, Star is Born.
Remakes are being helmed by auteurs now, which is very different to what it looked like in 2010 when, what's his fucking
the
name
The last one
again?
Of the sort of
the
movement.
What's the director's name?
Harald Zwart.
Harald Zwart. You don't get Harald Zwart doing Suspiria, you know? You get Luca Guadagnino. Yeah.
But like, you do, I think of the sort of like soulless cash grab remake trend. I think Ben-Hur was probably the last one that I can think of.
Right.
That was like supposed to be a big deal at least.
Mm, right. I see. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But hey, just hit up that comment section and let us know.
I thought, as I talked before about it, I thought Jackie Chan was pretty good in this. The scene where he does the whole like, I'm now drunk and my family,
I have a tragic backstory.
My family died. I've never been impressed by Jackie Chan. I've never been impressed by his acting before. But this had, this is not as good as...
This had Jaden Smith opposite him, so he looked even better.
Yeah. This is, if Karate Kid 1 is like a Rocky thing, is Rocky. Mm. This is the closest we have to Creed, right? With like a heart-wrenching... It's not as heart-wrenching as Stallone and Creed. I'm not even entertaining saying that. but it's lifted from the same school of acting. Where it's like, because my image of Jackie Chan is just him always playing the guy from Rush Hour and everything he's in. Where in this, he's sad and quiet and private and like... I don't know. I just thought it was something to latch on to in a film I didn't care that much about.
Yeah, fair. Funny, you're not the only one who likes Jackie Chan. Apparently there was a bunch of stuff, like, because they shot on location in China.
Yeah.
And because China loves Jackie Chan so much, there was a lot of strings that were able to be pulled to give them access to places they probably wouldn't be. Like, so there's stuff shot on the Great Wall of China.
Yeah.
Things like that. That was shot around, like, military exercises.
Yes, cool. That's awesome. I did think, though, there's a bit where Dre first sees the karate dojos or the kung fu dojos. Mm. Are they even called dojos? They're probably not. And he, like, presses his face against the glass like a kid looking in a candy store. And you see the inside of these places, and I was like, fuck, that turns me off. Like, I've been to, I entertained Boys Brigade when I was like 8 years old. I went to a community hall and did these like extracurricular activities, and there's a smell to the room and a coldness to the room. And it's so unappealing to me to do something. But he's like, whoa, they're doing kung fu. All I could see was the room and the paint peeling off the walls and the like, you know what I mean? Do you ever do anything like that? Do you ever go to any... Parents ever make you do anything like that?
No, I went to a youth group once.
Yeah. It's not exactly youth group. Youth groups that I went to are usually in someone's house. I'm talking more like...
Yeah, this wasn't like a community hall.
Programs and things like that. But it would still suck if it was a youth group. Fuck, I hate that shit, man. I'm like that kind of shit triggers me. It's the closest I have to something triggering me.
I didn't know it was a religious thing.
Right.
Until the end, when they're like, after trying to shove as many fucking marshmallows in my mouth and still talk as I could, they're like, now what do we learn about Jesus?
That's such a biting satire of youth group culture, Richard. Well done. I found that very funny. I don't know how ubiquitous or relatable that is to anyone else, but yeah.
Wow. Well, thank you very much. Mm. One thing that struck me right at the start of this film is it uses Do You Remember by Jay Sean, which is a very 2010 song.
Mm, it's very 2010 it's like, soundtrack in general for this film.
Yeah, the Never Say Never by Justin Bieber and Jaden Smith was the theme song to this film.
Weird. Weird to hear that song it's, again.
Yeah, it's very funny starting with that. And then they do they get on the plane to China and it plays Say by John Mayer. Poker Face, Low are all used. It's very funny. Responses were like, I mean, the 66%, it's about that, you know, there are a lot of people that are just like never going to like this, but there are a few reviewers you can come across that are just like, hey, look, it's not that bad.
It's totally fine. It's of the remakes we've seen. I think it's probably one of the better ones, this era of remake.
Which, I never thought I would say.
Hmm. Well, you should never say never.
I don't know what I'm improving now. So there is obviously a major continue the franchise that we've spoken about a few times, the series Cobra Kai, which started out on YouTube Red. And then when that service went under, it went to Netflix, where it had a few more seasons. It's been renewed. And it might be one of the things that I think is delayed because the writer's strike, but it's got a sixth and final season upcoming.
And Machio's in it?
Yeah, he's a main character from the
start. A main character from the start. Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah. So, because I also thought that it was, I think maybe he comes in a little later into the season, because I remember when Cobra Kai was starting, and this was back at the time when I would read / film every day to just get the latest movie news, and it was like, Machio appears in tonight's Cobra Kai. But yeah, there are a few other continue the franchises. There's an animated series I mentioned, which was like a Saturday morning cartoon type thing. There was a couple of pitches for other things as well in the Miyagi verse, as the Cobra Kai creators would call it. And I did look up as well to see if Hilary Swank has been in Cobra Kai. Everyone has said, like she said, I would do it if they asked me. And as recently as like a few months ago, Ralph Macchio was like, never say never.
And which is again a reference to the Karate Kid.
Yeah. So in a 2020 interview with Collider, Billy Zabka revealed that Pat Morita actually pitched him an idea in 2005 for a fifth Karate Kid film where Johnny Lawrence would now be a doctor and is tasked with caregiving for Mr. Miyagi in his final stages of life, and his health is failing him. But Marita passed away in 2005 and the project was abandoned. Oh, wow. That's a cool idea. Apparently that idea was somewhat used in Cobra Kai as well.
Right.
And in January 2020 of last year, Ralph Macchio revealed that he had previously been approached in 2012 about the potential for a Karate Kid Rocky crossover film.
Why not?
And it was intended to be directed by John G. Avildsen, who hadn't directed a film since, I think, 1999. And the plot would have involved Daniel LaRusso's daughter and Rocky Balboa Jr. opening a dojo together. Macchio stated that he and Milo Ventimiglia, who plays Rocky Jr. in Rocky Balboa 2006, were pitched the idea, but described the concept as awful. after Macchio expressed his disinterest in the story, the project subsequently fell into development hell before being fully abandoned in favor of Creed and Cobra Kai.
Good riddance.
Yeah, like the stupid sounding idea, like taken away. Like instead, we get two of what are considered the best, like continue the franchises of like 80s properties. Any other segments we pitch our own, but we rank. Okay. AJ, what is your continuation of the Karate Kid? All right,
here's my Karate Kid continuation, Richard. It is me seeing a single scene from Cobra Kai mm-hmm. and going, that looks pretty good, I'm going to watch it. Because nothing is going to make me watch it otherwise. I even need to see, like, the best scene in the show or something. You know, like, I need to see Daniel
showing up at the dojo.
Yeah, I need to see a spoiler that makes me go, that actually sounds pretty cool. I'm going to check out the whole show. That's my Continue the Franchise.
Yeah, fair enough. I forgot a film. I forgot something in there as well in the Continue the Franchise. In, what are we looking at? 1 year from Wednesday, there's a new Karate Kid film coming out.
What?
Yeah, so it has been, the Cobra Kai creator has said that it's not connected to the TV series, and it's been described as a return to the original Karate Kid franchise, and it comes out June 7, 2004. And get this, in the last week, Jackie Chan has entered talks to reprise his role.
Did you say it comes out in 2024? All right. So we're getting a sequel to the Kung Fu Kid.
What? No, it's a return to the original Karate Kid franchise, but Jackie Chan, well, maybe not to reprise his role, but he's entered talks to return.
Right. But we could be looking at a combining of the canon.
Potentially, or playing a new character, or
in this universe would mean that just these staggeringly similar concepts played out in real life 25 years apart from each other.
Yeah. There was a sequel to the 2010 one announced shortly after, but it just lost momentum. I've just pulled up some information as well. They've the creators of Cobra Kai have said that they are not part of the Miyagi-verse, the 2010 film. They've ruled out that completely because Jackie Chan is mentioned in season one of the show as a human. So if the characters in our show have seen a movie.
They reference Jackie Chan.
Yeah, if the characters in our show have seen a movie called The Karate Kid, that's the one they've seen.
Right.
But yeah.
There you go.
Crazy that.
What's.
I'm so fascinated now by what this might be. I mean, it might just be they're like, oh, we're going to get. It's set in the world of the original, but Jackie Chan is just playing an unrelated character. But I'd forgotten to mention that, but that sort of was going to tie into my pitch is that, yeah, do some kind of crossover. And it's like, do I want to give Jaden Smith work? Do I want to see Jaden Smith back as the Karate Kid? And
yes, I do.
Yeah, maybe I do. Maybe I do. But yeah, maybe it's like, because, you know, you could do like the Kung Fu Kid versus the Karate Kid, but unfortunately, you called both films the Karate Kid. So now if you head over to letterboxd.com/cultpopture, you can find our ranked list of every franchise we have ever covered. That's right. And we place them on that list. And so, AJ, you and I now have the arduous task of placing The Karate Kid somewhere in our list of 177 franchises.
I mean, it's pretty middling, I would say. Is it above the Nymphomaniac constant? It isn't, is it? Okay, so where? Give me a film. I'll say higher or lower.
Okay, let me just
give me a franchise.
Now the list is getting so long that it takes so long to scroll through it. I'm near the Nymphomaniac. Okay, so just below it, we've got. Is it better or worse than Twilight?
Worse.
Is it better or worse than Rambo?
Better.
Is it better or worse than Diary of a Wimpy Kid?
Oh, it's definitely next to it. What do you reckon? I'll let you make the call.
I think it's probably better. So that goes between, and our new number 93. For those playing along at home, let us know how you did, because we now have listeners that have bets on where it's going to go.
It's like the horse races.
Yeah. So new number 93 between Twilight and Diary of a Wimpy Kid.
That feels apt.
Now, AJ, we should turn over to the franchise roulette or something at this point, shouldn't we?
Well, I'm just going to stop you there, because in order to decide our next franchise, we either go franchise roulette where we draw a random number, or we go from what our Patreons have voted on for the month. But, Richard, as you said earlier, it is the 7-year anniversary of the podcast, in which we have started this godforsaken tradition where we will return to a franchise from previous years to give it a second shot. It initially started as like, well, we're a lot better now than we were in season one. But then
we got worse again.
Yeah. I was going to say, it really quickly just became any franchise. Like, it could be Antoine Dwinell if we wanted
to. Well, the Karate Kid was to receive a few votes, which...
There you go.
Very funny. That's
so
funny.
It's gone from being like a genuine experiment to like see if, you know, that how we are compared to how we were 7 years ago. It went from that to just like the torture porn of it all, of making us watch something again.
Although, to be fair, if you look at the ones we've recovered, it was like Spider-Man was like, we didn't have enough patrons to do a proper vote at the time. And I don't know why or how Spider-Man won. And then we had Freddy vs. Jason, which was one that's like, this needed to be done properly. That's an example of we were better. The Mummy, as much as I hated doing it, was one that it's like, we would have covered it differently now had we rolled it. And Jurassic Park, when we covered it, was a very incomplete franchise. But then when it was reduxed, it was now a complete franchise.
Yeah.
And so it's like, they all kind of have made sense in their own way. And there was... every year we've decided it in different ways. We've usually put up a poll of like all the different options, and then we do like a bracket, yada yada. But this month we decided to do it as a normal Patreon poll, and it's just comment below a franchise we've done before you want us to see us redo. And yeah, as I mentioned, some that got a few votes behind them were Karate Kid, Dungeons and Dragons, Evangelion, Ghostbusters, Sister of the Traveling Pants, which almost won the Year of the Mummy, and that was kind of like there was a big movement behind that. But the two that it was really between in the end, and both for good reason, they're both season one episodes, Tyler Perry's Madea and Back to the Future. So the Madea episode isn't available on the feed anymore, and makes sense to be redone. Back to the Future, we split into three episodes, and it's one of those, like, it's such a seminal franchise that we just it feels weird that we did it so early. This was neck and bloody neck. I mean, like, Madea took a commanding lead at the start, and then late in the game, Back to the Future sort of rose to meet her. And
can I just say as well, the I don't know what's won, and the balance I'm currently sitting on is, do I want to rewatch a trilogy that I've seen probably too many times and you know, seen it, but it's good, but it's like, you know, do I really want to do that? Or do I want to revisit the now 13 film franchise of the worst shit I've ever seen in my life? When we first did Redux, we limited it to season one episodes, and even that was scary because I was worried people were going to latch on to Madea. And I remember saying to you back when we did first Redux, I remember saying to you, Richard, I don't think I can watch Madea again, dude. Mm. So, what's going to happen, Richard? Tell us in just a second what is won. Before that, if you like this episode, please consider following us on Instagram and Twitter at Culpopture. You can also join the Discord, which you'll find a link to in the show notes, and talk to us about why it should actually be called The Karate Kid and The Kung Fu Kid's a bad name. And you can also support us on Patreon, where you get to do shit like this and make our lives actively worse occasionally. But you also get to give us money, so there's a weird sort of trade-off there. You get to give us money. Richard, put me out of my misery. What has won the poll?
So I sent you a screenshot earlier in the day that, well, so I messaged you this morning to say Madea and Back to the Future are still tied. And then I sent you a screenshot later in the day that reflected that Back to the Future was now one vote ahead. But in that time, since then, AJ, I am sorry to say that Madea is still in second place. We're going to be reduxing Back to the Future.
Oh my god, dude! You totally got me. I like. Here's the thing, and this is a bit like out of school. Like, I just don't have time to watch the Madea movies. Yeah, I couldn't do it. I physically could not do it. And I'm grateful that we don't have to. And Back to the Future feels like it has been a long time in the running for
Redux. This is why we made Redux, because we wanted to redo Back to the Future, because we thought we'd be... Like, that first year, we could have just been like, hey, in honor of our anniversary, we're redoing Back to the Future, and none of this would have ever happened. But, yeah, I mean, I'd said in the Discord, like, if Madea were to win, we would just split them up, because... We just don't, like, the podcast has evolved beyond the point of, wow, they crammed that all that watching into 2 weeks. It's like, that's the least interesting part of this podcast, I think, anyway. Mm. And so I would much rather do 6 weeks of Madea than try to fucking squeeze them all into...
And for all those who had their hearts set on Madea, for all those who wrote out very, very well-reasoned arguments for why Madea should be this year's Redux, I just want to say to you, like, fuck you losers! It's not the Redux, bitches! We're doing Back to the Future, assholes! just to stoke the flame for this.
Yeah, well, and hey,
you'll never get me to rewatch Madea, patrons. You will never do it. You will never achieve it. I will never do it.
Well, see, because the thing is, we could just not do Redux next year.
Yeah, fuck you guys.
Yeah.
Hey. Another cool thing about the Patreon as well is that you get to give us something to talk about in the post-credit scene, which is coming at you right after this music ends. Thank you for joining us for our Karate Kid conversation and the subsequent wailing on you for the Madea. But yeah, Richard, sayonara.
Okinawa.
Welcome along to the post-credit scene. This is a segment at the end of each episode where if you donate $5 or more over at patreon.com/coldpopshire, you get to give us something to talk about, and this is the post-credit scene. Richard, who's it from and what is it?
Today's post-credit scene, I haven't even got Google Sheets open.
No, we're on a roll. Keep it snappy, man.
Today's post-credit scene comes to us from Brent Taylor, who says, if you were stranded on a desert island with two characters from unrelated franchises covered on pod, and the goal was not to escape, but to survive and thrive, who would you pick?
Lorraine McFly.
Why?
Because she's hot. I don't know. Because I'll probably have a chance with her, dude, if we're stuck on an island together.
And then it's like, and Marty McFly. Fuck, they're just going to... They have to be unrelated franchises.
No, they have to be unrelated. All right, well, let's go like... Okay, let's go Antoine Dwinnell, because no matter how much more suave he is than me initially,
you can find when it all comes side of
but even if he woos her first, it's certainly not going to last, and I'm going to be the only choice left.
Very nice.
This is how I win. This is how I find happiness.
My choices would be Charlie Swan. Got to have a sheriff on the island.
And, well, you've got to. Optimus Prime. So you can drive around in a cool fire truck.
I mean, that's the thing. It's like, I feel like you want someone who's like... I was thinking of like a superhero, because you want someone who can sort of like create matter, I guess.
Like matter creator.
Yeah, from X-Men.
What's a shame we haven't done Aladdin yet. I would have picked the genie.
Oh, yeah, the genie would have been great. Is there anyone...
The mask?
Yeah. Fuck, no, he would get so annoying.
It'd be a fucking nightmare,
it's like,
dude.
My picks, I'm going to cheat and pick three, and I choose Lloyd Christmas, Ace Ventura, and Stanley Ipkiss for the most insufferable... Look, Jim Carrey's a great actor, fun characters on their own. To do the opposite of survive and thrive, to make me want to kill myself, I would hang out with those three. That answers the opposite of your question, and I cheated by adding a third. But there you go, Brent. I hope you enjoyed that answer.